And there are a lot of assassinations also by the British in Dublin. There's three people who were shot in Drumcondra, and there's a great scandal about that. There's three people who were murdered in Dublin Castle on the night of Bloody Sunday. But in both executions, and also I should say the British executed, I think, 10 people in Dublin, hanged them actually, you know, including Kevin Barry very famously, and the so-called Forgotten 10, who were mostly captured in an action in Pear Street. But the British, while they did do these things, assassinations and executions, the Free State were much more thorough, if you like. They used terror in a more thorough way. They did many more assassinations. There's at least 21 assassinations in Dublin carried out covertly. There's another, I mean, of the 80 or 81, I think, is the number of official executions, 30 or 40 of them are in Dublin. The Free State is quite ruthless. They're not so worried about the British as about alienating public opinion, because by and large they know Irish opinion is on their side. They've quite clear objectives, which the British didn't have. So in a lot of ways, the Free State response is much more ruthless. In terms of combating assassinations in the street, which we talked about are similar in both periods, arrests and so forth took a toll. But basically, the pro-treaty soldiers, the National Army soldiers, are in the same predicament as the British soldiers were in their years before that, in that they're in a reactive role. They're getting attacked. They don't know from where. By the time they've got themselves organised, their attackers have largely got away. And that explains some of the atrocities on guerrillas in both of those periods. The British on the whole were much more indiscriminate about shooting at civilians. I mean, a lot of the attacks in James's very, very good article on the Dardanelles in Dublin, what you see is that the British get attacked, grenades are thrown at them, and they fire in all directions, and they hit a lot of people, and they shoot a lot of people at roadblocks when they don't stop, which Union Halpin has mentioned to us. The Free State troops do that, but they don't do so much of it. They don't do nearly so much of it. They're much more considerate, if you like, or they're much more worried about causing civilian casualties. At any rate, they don't do it so much. There's one occasion where they do fire at a protest of women on O'Connell Street protesting against Republican prisoners, and there are occasions where they shoot people by mistake, but not nearly so many as the British. So in short, you can sum it up as the Free State intelligence is much better than the British. They're much more ruthless in a way, but they're more sparing on civilians.
Well, could that have something to do with the fact that they are actually Irish?
Of course,
in many cases drawn from Dublin themselves. But in terms of the IRA in Dublin, as James was saying, like the active service unit and the squad, the coming of the treaty, the signing of the treaty, what was the reaction like within the Dublin IRA to the signing of the treaty, particularly within Collins' squad?
There's two kind of elite units in the IRA. Like you mentioned, there's the active service unit and the squad. And those people are very, very close to Collins. Collins, during the War of Independence, would meet them after every operation and would go drinking with them, actually. And this became a problem because they were drinking too much. And whatever they thought about the treaty, if they had worked out a political position on the treaty, I don't know. But they were very close to Michael Collins. Michael Collins told them the treaty is a good thing, and they went along with him. And they were the elite of the Free State, if you like, in the Civil War. They were also the most ruthless people in the Civil War. They did almost all the atrocities of the Civil War were carried out by people who had been in the squad or the active service unit in Dublin, or they were involved in them. The anti-treaty IRA, James perceptively remarked, the rank and file of the Dublin IRA, the Dublin Brigade, who had been increasingly involved in the War of Independence as it went on, because originally it was just the squad, then it was the active service unit, then all the companies had to carry out one action every week, which spreads the load of violence, if you like, much more widely. But those people in the Dublin Brigade who didn't have this special relationship with Michael Collins, who were closer to their own leaders, people like Oscar Traynor, they were predominantly anti-treaty, and they were the people who were occupied the forecourts. They were the people who occupied O'Connell Street at the start of the Civil War.
Well, do you think the fact that the squad is almost unanimously pro-treaty and very, very committed to Michael Collins, and these are held up as the elite of the Dublin IRA, the fact that the majority of the rank and file members of the IRA go anti-treaty, do you think that means perhaps that there was a tension there during the War of Independence between the squad and rank and file IRA members? Or maybe there was a resentment towards the squad and maybe a resentment towards the special relationship between the squad and Collins?
I couldn't say exactly if there's a resentment in the rank and file, because I haven't seen that, but it's quite possible. What we do know for sure, though, is that the people in the squad and the ASU did have this elitist attitude, where they considered they wouldn't let anyone else into their circle. Now, obviously, there's security reasons for this, because they could be informers and they could be taken out and killed, which, of course, did happen. They did think of themselves as, if you like, the elite of the IRA, and they certainly didn't associate with the normal rank and file members of the IRA in Dublin. And of course, you get this reflected in the Civil War to some degree, where they say we have no time for trucers. We're the real fighters. The real fighters are pro-treaty. So yeah, you certainly do get a split there. I mean, I think it might be a matter for further research how that works both ways, you know?
Yeah, but it is curious that their support for the treaty wouldn't translate into influencing the vast bulk of the Dublin IRA to also follow the treaty.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's definitely indications that there's resentment there, all right.
And on that note, just thank you very much there, John, and also thank you to James Dorney. And if we can give you his website, you can check out some of his articles there on www.jamesdorney.com. That's Durney.